I'm going to get off the hobby horse here, John. I'm a bit sick of the behaviour of the media. I always have been.
We can go on to my favourite subjects and talk about buses.
All right, let's go to buses. It's a little less controversial. Everyone's agreed that we don't have enough buses if we want to deal with climate change. What have you got, John? This is our regional council information coming out, have we?
Yeah, well, it's regional council in the form of Future Proof, which is the local council's bus regional council in the Hamilton area, looking at how we might cope with growth in population and how we might persuade more people to travel on buses rather than using cars. So the idea is to increase public transport to the level where you won't have to build so many roads and all the other costs which go with that.
So, John, I'm looking at the bar graph you've sent me, and the thing that immediately stands out is that we're in the West Waikato area, and the sheer number of children using our bus service is pretty much double everywhere else in the Waikato region.
But then you look at the bus services that are provided, and predominantly they're provided at times which suit school kids and not everybody else. In Cambridge has got a virtually hourly bus service, and yet the numbers of passengers on Raglan buses are 22,900 and 26,700 for Cambridge.
So we've slightly more slightly less people, but half. Well, no, how much less bus service? Like a third? Yeah. A third of it?
Well, we have buses about every 4 or 5 hours, and as I say, they've got buses about every hour.
So their buses must be pretty empty a lot of the time.
Well, they do say that on the evening buses, only about 5 people are using them. But at least they have evening buses. Our last bus leaves Hamilton at 6 o'clock.
So I presume that you have pointed this out to Future Proof.
Yes.
And their response?
Well, so far, nothing.
Oh.
Because I've also been pointing out the problem that we've got with our main road. We're trying to increase the, well, not trying to, but planning to increase the population by about 4 times. And we're not providing 4 times the quality of road. And we've already got a high crash rate. And we've already got congestion at the roundabouts at Dinsdale at peak times.
So let's just pin down
4 times as much traffic through that, and you've got problems.
Yeah. So let's just pin this down a little bit. There was a council, Waikato District Council, population projection that said, starting about 2 or 3 years ago, that it was the 2070 prediction for the next 50 years, was the population would quadruple in the urban area out here. And John, the high crash rate at the moment, can you give us some stats on that, or a comparison to other roads or something for State Highway 23?
Well, the easiest way to compare it is to look at the maps that the Department of Transport produce. They produce crash action or crash maps. I've forgotten the exact title. But they show a dot for every crash. And you look at our road and you compare it with other roads, and we've got a lot more for the amount of traffic.
Right, okay. So more crashes per car than other state highways in the region, would you say?
Yeah, I probably ought to do the figures on it sometime, but it's what appears when you look at the map. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And you have pointed this out. I've seen some of the discussions, and if I could sum it, because John sent me a copy of the email interaction he had with someone at Future Proof or someone at Council, I can't remember which, or both, actually. And my takeaway from that was that there's far bigger population growth expected in the north of the district, so they're going to be focusing on that. And I kind of took that to mean, like, the numbers they were using showed that we would have about 10% of the population growth of the north of the district. I would have thought that meant we at least got 10% of the funding support to cope with the growth, but it looks like we're getting 0% of it. This is in terms of planning.
Well, the problem is that they seem to have forgotten about us, because they've actually done the planning for most of the other areas. They've looked at how they ought to improve buses, trains, roads, whatever, and cope with the population they're expecting. But they've not done that for Raglan. They've just said, oh, there's a corridor study being done. And that's the one which district council's about to do, which just covers Raglan itself and not the main road.
Yeah, so a corridor, I would have thought a corridor study was the road. That's the State Highway 23. That's the corridor out from Hamilton to Raglan. But what they're referring to is just roads around Raglan.
Yeah, well, the corridor from Bow Street to Main Road. So I suppose you could call that a corridor, and they are doing that.
And that's useful. We don't want to knock that. But it's what's going to happen to State Highway 23. I'm interviewing the mayor on Thursday, John. Do you want me to ask a question about that?
Could be an interesting topic to cover. Yep.
I better give her a heads up so she actually can find an answer, because otherwise I suspect. Are all the mayors involved with the future proof, or is this operating at a bureaucratic level?
There is representation from Waikato District. I've forgotten who it is.
Is one of the councillors.
Will be the chair of Infrastructure Committee.
Like Eugene Patterson or someone like that. That's him. Okay. So we're saying State Highway 23 is already got a high crash rate, but Future Proof is not looking at doing anything.
Yes. And yet we're carrying on with the planning to increase the population.
Well, I mean, the planning, there is no plan specifically to increase population. We just know that the private developers have got lots of houses or lots of properties coming down the pipeline, and the population will increase. I guess the planning we're doing is to cope with what's been driven privately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
All right, that's a corridor study, or the not corridor study. We're going to look about the community. There's a community board meeting tomorrow in the town hall supper room. 1:30 is the time they start. Is that?
Yes.
Is that the open forum? I can't remember, John. What's happened to my brain?
Yeah, well, the open forum is now part of the main meeting. So it used to come before the main meeting, but now it's part of it. And it's flexible. So it could be 10 minutes, it could be 40 minutes, but roughly it's sort of half an hour, somewhere about the beginning of the meeting.
Well, neither you nor I will be there to ask them questions, so it might be quite a quick one.
Yeah, maybe it's a 10-minute one this time.
Yes, yes.
But I mean, part of the problem is that it's held at a time when most people are working, which we're the only community board to do that. All the other community boards in Waikato District meet in the evening. So that's another issue. Again, you might ask the mayor why. She'll probably pass it back and saying it's up to the community board.
I won't ask you that, because that's exactly what will happen. What things are about that they've got on their agenda do you want to talk about, John?
You talked about the Manu Bay breakwater with Dennis when you talked to him on Friday. That one's on the agenda.
There's actually been some progress there, which is nice to see. There's some five ideas, I think, two of which are no good, but three of which might be acted on.
Well, look, I've got slightly different feedback on that from some surfers, and they're saying, well, we were in the majority at that meeting and nobody listened to us. Dennis did mention that the surfers didn't want anything done, but that seems to be an option that council's not seriously looking at.
Dennis reported that the surfers would. The conclusion I took was that there were three particular ways of doing the breakwall that reflected the waves in a way that was not significant to the surf break. Are the surfers, do they disagree about that?
Well, my understanding, I wasn't at the meeting either, but my understanding from talking to surfers is that their view is they don't want anything done. They want to leave it as it is.
Oh, you did mention that.
Change at all.
I actually don't think that's viable, because they've had big boulders washing over and sitting, like lurking just beneath the surface on the ramp, and if boats are going to come on that ramp, there's a good chance they'll whack into one. Like as a non-expert, just looking at that, that doesn't look like a viable way to run a boat ramp.
Well, maybe the boat ramp needs to be checked before use, and maybe it needs to be only for use in good weather.
The trouble is you get all sorts of people of mixed experience and ability using boats out there. And I've seen, I mean, I hardly ever go out there and sit and watch boats. It's not something I do. But I remember being out there one day, seeing some very hair-raising behavior from someone who clearly shouldn't have been trying to use a boat out on the ocean, the open ocean. They really didn't know what they were doing. They didn't understand how waves work, anything really basic. They nearly tipped themselves over. They nearly crashed into a surfer. It was pretty hair-raising to watch. So given that you're going to have inept people using that place, I think you have to allow for that.
I think there's quite widespread agreement that it's a weird system, that to get behind the wheel of a car, you need to pass a driving test. But to get behind the wheel of a boat, you just jump in it and go.
Yeah, I mean, for people wondering what I'm talking about, they just tried to, they'd obviously gone out when it was flat and then the waves had come up. And when they came back in, instead of just kind of coming in on an angle at the same speed as the waves were coming through, they got as close as they could outside the brake line and then tried to dart across. And it got halfway across and then the wave started breaking. And so then they ran away from the wave heading toward the rocks on the beach. And then they realized that wasn't going to work. So then they tried to turn around and they just got round enough so that they didn't get tipped over. But then they almost hit a surfer. Like, it was really inept. You're right. Like, that should be the most basic thing. Understanding how waves work if you're going to go out in a boat on the ocean.
Yep, because the bar course is run quite regularly, but it's an optional thing, and probably quite a number of people who go out in boats locally haven't done the bar course.
Yeah. But having said that, I mean, even we wouldn't have boulders lurking on a road on our state highway, so even I can't see it. I just can't see it being viable to have boulders lurking on a boat ramp and people being told to look out for them, like. Yeah, I don't think the council's ever going to agree to that.
I think it's probably something that they need someone to inspect it and check after it's been a storm that there aren't any there, and if there are, put some warning signs there until they actually clear them. So that's probably a cheaper option than spending $2 million rebuilding that wharf, that breakwater.
That is a cheaper option, you're right, and it is. We do know staff have a rough estimate that it might cost, or an allowance that it might cost, $2 million. So so we've talked around the issue. I guess we wait and see a bit, John.
Yeah, well, neither of us have been at these meetings, and neither of us are surfers or boaters. So, I'm just mentioning it's one of the things that's coming up tomorrow afternoon. There may well be discussion. There may well be discussion in that public forum section if there are people who know more than you and me and want to go along there.
Okay. What else do you want to talk about?
Let's keep on having this mention of Raglan Community Board plans, and I'm not sure whether the Community Board has done some plans yet and whether those are going to be revealed tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, we don't. So that's we're saying we don't know. There's a thing we don't know anything about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Closed circuit television has been on the agenda, I think, ever since I've been attending community board meetings. But they're apparently now finalising an agreement with the Hamilton City Council, who are going to run it for them.
Yeah, you need someone actually looking at the feed that's coming through. Otherwise, they're not much use. And they're going to centralise it all in Hamilton City, I guess.
Yep. Civil defence has been on the agenda for a long time as well, and it looks as though we might get a meeting in August, and the aim of that is going to be to recruit people who might be on what they're calling an initial response group. So again, hopefully we might hear, those who are at the meeting tomorrow afternoon might hear a bit more about that.
Yeah, and there's a general call out, I think, for anyone who really wants to contribute to the community in this way around civil defence. I'm pretty sure they'll be looking for people, so get hold of either Dennis Amor or Lisa Thompson, our councillor and community board member, our community board chairperson.
Sound Splash is on the agenda again. The community board's been concerned about the fees that have been charged, and the agenda does say that fees options are to be presented to the community board in the near future, which means not this meeting but some other one. But it also says that staff are beginning work for the 2025 event. So there might be some more detail there on that.
Mm-hmm.
It did seem to go reasonably well last year, so maybe they've finally got the solution to most of the problems.
Bussing people in direct to the site from Hamilton and Auckland was definitely a winner. And I mean, that's an extra cost for concert goers, but it also meant they didn't have to drive here, so they're saving money as well. It's just a cost of transport. And they did have, I think, better coverage to stop people getting sunburned on the airfield if they were parking there and doing the park and ride.
One of the mysteries of the agenda is this one that's labelled privet, because it's just that one word. And at the last meeting, they decided to take it off the agenda, but it's still on the agenda. So
yeah, when I talked to
the
message hasn't got through to just take it off the list. I think the community board feels like it's not anything they can do something about. Privet is no longer considered to be a noxious weed, despite its rapid taking over of the sidelines of State Highway 23, forming the corridor. We'll just move on from that, John, because it's just something that has got stuck on, and we're all wasting our time talking about privet.
I just mention it as one of these weird anomalies that seems to appear on the agendas from time to time. Because, to be honest, the agenda doesn't cover anything of any great importance, to, as far as I can see. And privet's one of the lesser things which is actually still on there. So, yeah, just a mystery. Anyway, we're near a walkway. Those who've been down there have seen that there's now a rather wider strip of concrete to walk on for most of the way along there, but then it narrows just as you get to the bridge. And I'm not clear why they've left that bottleneck.
Money, John. Money. Cost too much money to widen that little bit.
But anyway, it's better than it was, and we're promised that we're going to get railings, so they're going to be closing it off again for a bit, because they didn't put in permanent railings because the concrete was still setting.
Right. So that's going to be in a few weeks or something that's happening, isn't it?
Yep.
Here we go. The walkway opened. Oh, no, it opened on the 19th of July. Closed again in August is all I've got. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. One of the things that we were going to do at the same time was sort out the lighting, because ever since I've lived here, the lighting's not been at all reliable along there. Usually it's not been working at all. And they're now saying that they're going to get Parks Department to look at it along with the lights on the bridge that aren't working.
Most of them aren't working, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, I'm not sure that's a cost thing that they've delayed it, or whether there's a good reason for not doing it at the same time. But it seems that when you're pouring concrete, it's a good idea to put some electric cables underneath it to link up to the lighting rather than do it as a separate project.
We've talked before in the past about having a town manager who has their finger on the pulse of what's happening in Raglan, and all sorts of things like that would be picked up. But when the decisions are made by people in an office 50 k's away or 60 k's away, then opportunities like that do get missed.
Yes. That's all we can say about it.
Said it before many times, John, many times.
Yes. Greenslade Road Playground is on the agenda yet again, waiting for confirm a meeting with Mana Whenua to bring in some traditional Māori play. That's something which I hadn't noticed mentioned in there before.
No, that's a new thing as well, yeah. So, yeah, this is just, things move slowly. When you're doing public consultation with council, it takes many months, it would seem, and that's what's happening. Yeah. But there is a budget for it, so I'm fairly confident it will happen.
Yep. That's coming out of the development budget, I think, isn't it, for the housing which is being developed over there, so that's why that's happening.
I don't know. I don't know what those words mean exactly, John.
Yeah, well, this is one of the problems with council agendas. I suspect they're written by staff and not really intended to be read by anybody. Because very often I get the impression that community board members and council members haven't read the whole of the agendas that they're presented with. Probably because of this problem that they're almost unintelligible in places.
Yeah, Yeah, well, that's another thing we've talked about quite a lot. What else do you want to bring up? Are we mentioning the discretionary fund? John, is that exciting news that we can bring people?
It's interesting that they've got far less money than they're actually being asked for.
That can't be right. No, that can't be right, because are we not into the new budget? The council financial year starts on the 1st of July, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think there should be
$1,500.
Because it's a meeting on the 31st 15, of July and not on the 1st of August. I suspect it might not be in there, but yeah, there should be another $14,000 to add on.
Yeah, so they therefore can fit. St. Peter's Church wants asking for $5,000 for the centennial stained glass window. Tomato Tennis Club, $5,000 for upgrading grounds. And Raglan Country and Blues Festival, which is going to be a festival during Labor Weekend. Nearly $3,000 to promote and pay local artists. So I know that they're not going to give them all that money, because they'll use up most of the year's stuff in one go. So they'll be cutting that back quite substantially, I should think.
Because the community board's now looking at maybe instalments for spending their money, rather than saying, oh, we'll use all $14,000 at the beginning of the year and then have nothing for the rest of the year.
Mm. Yeah. Although, I mean, previous community boards have never needed to give themselves instalments. They just knew that they had to save money for the, you know, later on in the year. Uh-huh. So whatever way they do, though, I'm sure they won't be giving all that money out, sadly.
Because there's not much detail about these. I'm not sure what community benefit there is by St. Peter's Church having another stained glass window, or what benefit there is from Tomato Tennis Club redoing their grounds. We don't have any details of these as far as I can see.
I know about the Tomato Tennis Club. The tennis courts there have fallen into disrepair, and they want to, the community out there, the people out there, want to get it fixed up and get it working again and have a functional tennis club just as part of the life of the community out there. So there's a bit of a groundswell around that one, and I'm pretty sure they'll be getting support from other places as well. In fact, I know they will, because the project's going to cost a heck of a lot more than $5,000.
Yep. Because the problem, it seems to me, with all these things, and one of the reasons that I think Dennis put in a submission to the annual plan at one stage saying that it wasn't a great thing to be spending ratepayers' money on, is that it's quite hard to see that there is benefit to a significant number of people, at least from some of these things.
Well, without wanting to cast judgment on anyone here, the stained glass window might be seen to only benefit the parishioners at the church, but the Tomato Tennis Club, that's a whole community out there. And having community activities that help form community and build community are really important. Whether the community board sees that as something that they're supposed to look after is another story. I think they should. I think that's what part of leadership is in a community, as you think about those kind of well-being issues as well, like community well-being. But
maybe it's better value for money than spending on car park repairs, which is one of the other things on the agenda. So something like $250,000 is being spent on each of the car park repairs, and the one at Wainui has been done. They've extended the scope of it a bit, and the one at Papahua is about to be done.
Someone has made the comment about the one at Papahua. If they're not going to stop the sea from encroaching on Papahua, that's not going to be good for the nice new car parks.
It's got some way to go yet, so it may not. And as has been commented, it's probably the result of taking away the groin that used to support the old footbridge. Mm. And there's probably a limit to how far it goes back.
Well, so 24 metres, the groin, effective, what is now the effective groin, which is the foot of that bridge, is 24 metres behind where the old one was. So theoretically, that means you could lose
that much. Yeah,
you theoretically, maybe you might lose 24 metres of the beach over a few decades. I'm obviously not the expert on that. We'd have to ask Sean Mead, but he has said that he has been concerned the entire time that there would be substantial changes. And we do know from the past, like in the 40s, that the official line of the coast does cut through where some of that road actually is. So we do know that in the past the sea has come into where the road is a little bit.
And there's a whole load of stuff on the road names in Rangitahi, which seems to me to maybe go over the top a bit.
What do you
I
mean?
suppose it's good to be consulted, and it's better being over consulted than under consulted.
So, who's like Mana Whenua have been consulted? Is that what?
But they're also going into quite a bit of detail in the agenda. If anyone wants to look at it on the council website, it's available. So, or we've just been talking about, if you're interested in following it up more, have a look at the Waikato District Council website and look for the Rackham Community Board agenda for tomorrow's meeting.
Okay, all right. John, we've reached 10 o'clock. Is there any last important things that you want to mention?
Not particularly. Having looked at institutional racism, I just wonder whether we're guilty of it on the radio as well, because you listen to people like me, who are elderly white males, and I just wonder if we have that balance there as well. But again, being overzealous on that.
We don't do as good a job as we should be in that regard, but we are working on doing something about that at the moment. I'm just trying to organise a meeting for the committee, and I don't want to say what it's about. Oh, what I can say, we're going to do the Toitū Te Tiriti
It's good
workshop.
to be being looked at, so well
Yeah,
done.
but we do want to do more than that. But as always, making changes is slow moving. We're reliant on me, who has a day job of actually doing things like the show and daily maintenance and raising funds, and I'm trying to fit in organising all these whole new things as well. So it is fairly slow moving, but moves are being made. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good note to end on. So thank you very much.
All right, John. Well, thank you for calling in on Zoom.
It's not
And
raining anymore, so I might even get out. Thank you.
oh, it's not raining in Wellington. And you're going to be
Oh,
on the air tonight. And you said before you might play some of that speech by Chloe Swarbrick, which the media has ignored in favour of the beautiful controversy that they've been stirring up. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, John. Thanks for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
All right, just had to find the end button there for the Zoom call. All right, so John's on the air at 6. And you can also go and check out, if you want to know what Chloe Swarbrick was saying, useful information about what the Green Party's doing. YouTube, probably? Where does that go? I can't. There's a link. John sent me a link, but it doesn't actually link. Never mind. It's time to wrap up the show. I'll be back again. Not tomorrow. I've got an all-day workshop, planning workshop for the radio station in Hamilton tomorrow. So I will not be on the air, but I will be back on Thursday. So we'll see you then.